Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Very pleased to have back with us in short order. He was here with us a month or so ago, a fellow by the name of Kevin Taylor. Now, he is here today to talk about Kevin Taylor. We're not here to talk about vets and getting them employment and all that kind of stuff like we did with the Chamber of Commerce, but we're here to talk about his unique experience as a Green Beret. Never had an opportunity to talk to a Green Beret before. So I asked him very sheepishly, because I didn't want to get thrown on the floor. I said, are you willing to talk? Yeah, I'll talk to you. Good. So first of all, tell everybody a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. Morning, Kevin Taylor. I'm from Flint, Michigan originally. Grew up around blue collar, General Motors town. I think everybody knows of Flint, Michigan as the water crisis, but your typical Rust Belt town, manufacturing city. And when I graduated, it was already on the decline. So I ended up joining the military. It's funny, I say my entire military career was happenstance. I'd actually reached out to a Navy recruiter who asked me to meet him at my high school, and I waited for him and missed the bus in order to meet him. And as I stood there kicking rocks in the parking lot when he didn't show up, a Marine Corps recruiter pulled up and heard me, bashing the Navy recruiter's tardiness. And then lo and behold, I joined the Marine Corps and did my 4 years there as an engineer equipment operator. We always joke about recruiter stories, and how they trick you. I wanted to be a tanker, and they ended up getting me to drive a bulldozer instead. So it is kind of true with how they get you. But then after my 4 years in the Marine Corps, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I ended up going back home, doing some college. And then, we were in the middle of the global war on terror, and I still felt the itch. I wasn't quite done yet, lost a couple buddies, and decided I wanted to go back. And when I went to a recruiter again, I told him I wanted to be an infantryman, and he told me that the best route there was to sign up for special forces, and if I failed, then I would wind up in the infantry anyway. And so I did that, and the rest was history, and I retired out of the Army 2 years ago as a Master Sergeant Special Forces.
So you re-enlisted. You actually were out of the Army.
Yes, sir.
To begin with.
Yes, sir.
And then you went back in.
Absolutely. Didn't learn my lesson the first time.
So did you go back in as a Marine?
No, I came into the Army. They did let me keep my rank. Funny story, though, when you come into the Army under a Special Forces contract, there's no entry point for prior service people. And because I was already a non-commissioned officer, they didn't want me to pollute the private ranks. And so when I was at Fort Benning, Georgia, going through basic training for the second time, I got the luxury of living in a janitor closet turned into a bedroom.
Oh, isn't that nice?
It was beautiful.
That's nice.
Beautiful.
Welcome. Okay. So you went from the Marine Corps to the Army.
Yes.
All right. So when you were in the Marine Corps, did you do your basic down there at the Paris Island?
No, I was a Hollywood Marine. I went to San Diego. I got the luxury of watching airplanes fly over my head and land and take off every day, wondering why I joined the Marine Corps.
That's a tough, what is it, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is?
It's about 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months, 12, yeah, that's not easy. But I always remember I had a chance to meet a couple of young men, quite by accident, who were traveling with their grandfather, and they were going in. They had been enlisted in the Marine Corps. They hadn't been there yet. They're on their way to Paris Island. And I looked at, I got to know these kids over a week or 10 days of being around them. I said, they're never going to make it.
Sure.
I got an invitation to go to their graduation down at Paris Island. And I went down there with a friend of mine, and out they come, marching in formation. Blah, blah, blah. I said, my God, look at these guys. Look
Absolutely.
At them. Unbelievable.
The discipline.
Discipline. Yeah. One of them was thin as a rail when I knew him. he had gained. They put about 15 pounds on him, and he was solid as a block of concrete.
I mean, yeah, you come out in amazing shape.
Come out in amazing shape. All right. So you enlist as a in the Army, and they told you to go to Special Forces.
Right. So you basically you go to Fort Benning, Georgia, and you go through the infantry course, and then if you pass that, which most do, then you go to airborne school immediately. So it's same location, Columbus, Georgia, Fort Benning, and you make it through airborne school, which most do. Then you go to selection at Fort Bragg, and you spend a month there preparing for selection if you came in under a Special Forces contract. I think it might have changed now. And then selection lasts about a month. And if you make it through selection, then you stay there for anything between another year to 2 years of training.
So selection is what? They look at you?
No. Well, there's a lot of it's a pretty holistic interview, I would call it. It's about a month-long job interview where you're taking psychological batteries, they're doing sleep deprivation, they're making you run or ruck march for an unknown distance. You don't know what the next event really will be. There's just a lot of wearing you down and seeing how you react, testing your resiliency, testing your motivation, and just seeing if you're a sandbagger, if you're going to throttle it and try to last, or if you're going to go hard all the time. It's really just kind of testing your mettle and seeing how you are.
So how many were with you as in this selection period?
I think we started with just shy of 400. Usually the courses are between 3 and 4, and then I think we finished with just under 100.
You had 300 wash out?
Yeah, just about. Yeah, I think it was just about 300.
Oh, my gosh. And what happens to those who wash out?
Well, that's how they wind up with the infantry and I think civil affairs, psychological operations, some of the other jobs.
Gosh. So you made the top 100.
I made the top 100.
And do they rank the 100 based on a compilation of scores, like you're number 10 in the class of 100?
No, not really. If they do things like that, you wouldn't be aware of it anyway. It's really all that is the entry point to the training. So that's how they weed out the people that they don't think will make it through the course.
Okay.
And coming out of selection, all you really know is what your specialty skill will be and what your language assignment will be. Other than that, you're lumped in together, and that's just the start of all the training.
Okay, so did you move from a bulldozer driver to something else?
Yeah, they made me a weapons sergeant, which isn't really a compliment. In Special Forces, I would say until you're a little more experienced, being a weapons guy just kind of tells you you're the caveman of the team, and you're willing to carry the machine gun,
You're not allowed to fire it?
Well, yeah, absolutely allowed to fire what you carry. But I think, if you think of the stereotypes within a detachment, you have four main specialties. You have communications, you have engineering, and then you have your medical sergeants, and then you have your weapons sergeants. And it's funny because they are all very stereotypical on every detachment. And your nerds, as I call them affectionately, usually go to the medical or the communications areas, whereas your blue-collar or cavemen, as I affectionately call them, usually become your logisticians or your engineers and your weapons guys.
So you were responsible for all the weapons necessary for your group?
Absolutely. So on a detachment, the weapons guys are also, we mirrored a staff. So we had staff functions as well. And we were basically responsible for not only the weapons, but the training and running ranges and any training events that we did. We were responsible for that, to include the preparation, planning, execution of it.
So the 100 that you graduated with, are you still all together as
no,
a unit?
No. I mean, as a class overall, yes, but you get broken up based on your specialty. You go to different courses. Based on your language, you go to different courses and tracks. The medics, they stay longer. When I went through the course, there was a lot of lull time in between some of the phases. And it actually took me almost 2 years to go through because I was a weapons sergeant, so that wasn't the longer of the schools for our specialty, but I spoke Thai. I got assigned Thai as a language, and that was a long track. So that kept me there a little bit longer. And It just it really depended on what you got assigned. You know, if you were a medic, they got assigned Persian, Farsi, or Chinese. You were there for a good long
bit. So you had to learn a language.
You had to learn a language, yes.
And that's kind of a pass-fail thing? I mean,
it was absolutely a pass-fail. There's an aptitude test. It's really interesting, actually. The Army uses a make-believe language. They have a test wrapped around that gives them an idea of what you'll be able to handle learning. And then they assign you different tiers of languages. And then you have, for the short track, it was 3 months, I believe. And for the long tracks, it was 6 months every day of language training for 6 months.
Oh, my God.
At the end, you take a written and a speaking-listening test. And based on that score, you know, pass or fail.
So you felt pretty good that you understood the language?
No, it's funny. I think just to pass a language, you have to think you're really only speaking at like elementary school level. by the end of my career, I was speaking at least at a high school level. But depending on how much you travel to the area that speaks your language, you know, how much immersion opportunity you get, it's kind of tough to stay proficient in a language that you're not utilizing very often.
Yeah.
Thai is only spoken in Thailand, and there's a lot of English speakers in Thailand even then. So it wasn't something that was common use like Spanish or, you know, even French.
So it's fair to say you've probably totally forgotten that now.
I can still butcher some sentences. I can order a plate. It may not show up exactly how I want it, but I can definitely get some food.
All right. So you've been. All right. So is this all the training now? You got your weapons category. You've got your language. What happens next?
Well, there's a lot of phases to the course. You're doing small unit tactics. You're doing a lot of individual and then, you know, group training, team training. And at the end, the final test, if you would, is called Robin Sage. And it's about a month-long unconventional warfare exercise that spans the Carolinas and some of West Virginia even. And, if you graduate that, then you're now a Green Beret, and then you go to your group of assignment, which would be based on kind of your language, really. So most of your Spanish speakers go to one area of the world, so that you go to a group that respectively is responsible for that area of the world.
So what's this warfare thing in South Carolina and West Virginia? What is that?
So it's basically, it's a mock war. Gotta
hunt down the enemy?
Well, it's really, it's more of a comprehensive, like a complex geopolitical situation, where you get to apply all the things you've learned as a group, and you infiltrate behind enemy lines in area, and you try to influence a small group of people to organize and band together against a common enemy. And you spend about a month developing that organization, influencing them and broadening that influence, and it starts to flow into staff work even and some of the government approach.
So is it done on a video screen or is it
this is all real life. And there's volunteers all across the states, and there's, you know, law enforcement, there's retired people, there's landowners, there's we had whole communities come out sometimes when we do these mass casualty events, trying to respond to a bomb going off or something where you're treating a lot of patients for the medics to get their training in. You'd have children showing up and getting makeup done on them to appear like they had a blast injury or something. And they had such fun doing it, but that kind of training is so invaluable. You know, when you're thinking about virtual reality is a good augment for things, but there's nothing like the real thing.
Okay, so now are you fully graduated now? Did you get your Green Beret?
Fully graduated. You got your Green Beret. And
is there a big ceremony for that?
There used to be a very large ceremony for that at the Cumberland County Coliseum outside of Fort Bragg. They would rent that for a day. You have families come out. And it was kind of a two-day event. You would do a first ceremony where everybody puts on their Green Berets for the first time and gets their Special Forces tabs. And then the next day, you walk across the stage and get your certificate. And used to be something called a Yarborough knife. And it was like a serialized knife that every Green Beret got at graduation.
So I'm sure you've been asked this question before. Is going through what you just described as a Green Beret, as difficult, less difficult than a Navy SEAL?
I think it's, if I was being honest, I think it's probably to some degree a little less physically difficult. It's probably more of a physical marathon in that if you're there for 2 years, the likelihood of having an injury or something is pretty high. But there's a lot more focus on being a smart warfighter, I would say, in that, you know, Navy SEAL is not to say that they're dumber than a Green Beret, but they're more, you know, they're more of a shooting focused group of people. They do close quarters battle, concentrate on shooting skills and things like that. They're more of a shock troop kind of feel. And a lot of focus on the waterborne operations. Whereas Green Berets, I think, are more diplomatic, expected to be more critical thinkers, complex problem solvers, and dynamic. You know, on the battlefield, oftentimes we would get sent places because they didn't really know what to do, and we were sent there to kind of figure that out. So there's a lot of, decentralized leadership expectation and really just the ability to think through a problem, as you're in it.
All right, well, he's finished his training, and when we come back from our mid-program break, we're going to find out where he went and what he did as best we can as we continue our discussion with Kevin Taylor, a Green Beret who's now retired, living here in Rock Hill. Our Straight Talk program, of course, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. All right, here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, fresh subs and salads are our specialty. We do it 6 days a week. He knows what we're going to do. We're going to tell everybody out there why they should be in here. At the count of three, let's let them know. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Hey, Alex, have you tried that new pastrami on rye at Substation 2?
You're darn right I have, and you should too. It's freshly sliced, lean, delicious, served hot, and piled high. And I understand you better hurry because it's a limited time offer.
Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Most people experience orthopedic concerns at some point in their lifetime, whether it's arthritis, back pain, injury, or any other condition. At Piedmont Medical Center, our team understands joint pain can make a huge difference in your day-to-day activities, and we stand ready to help. With minimally invasive surgical options available, the orthopedic teams in Rock Hill and Fort Mill are here to help you break free from pain so you can live more happily. Learn more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Our common sense investing is not designed to take your life savings, roll the dice, and make you rich. We design a plan to keep the standard of living you have grown accustomed to the same throughout your retirement, be it 20, 30, or even 40 more years. Anderson Griggs Investments, 324-5044, or online at AndersonGriggs.com.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
It's soup weather and Substation 2 is ready. Nothing says fall like a cup of hot, delicious soup, and we serve a rotating selection of flavors. Just call to find out what's on the menu, because we never know what we're going to feel like making that day. Soup and sandwich, what a great combo. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Kevin Taylor joins us. He's a resident here of Rock Hill. He is a graduate of the United States Army Green Beret. And how long did it take you to get through all of this?
I went to Fort Benning, Georgia in May of 2007, and I arrived first Special Forces Group in August of 2009.
A couple years
ahead. Yeah, but a little over 2 years.
All right, so you got your language, you got your weapons assignment, you're a complete package now, you graduated, you were you were a group of 100 that started with 400.
Yep.
That shows you how select this thing is.
Right.
and the rest of them are in serving in the infantry.
Sure.
That's what happens when you flunk out, right?
It's true.
Okay. So do you sit down with somebody and they say, where do you want to go? Or do they say, hey, you're going over here?
No, based on your language, you end up going to that group. But once you get there, that's when it starts to, you start really figuring out how it works a little bit different than the rest of the military. Remember when I showed up, I did not have an assignment to a detachment, to a company, to a battalion even yet. And so I go to the group and I'm met with a PAX person, a staff person, thinking like an admin, like your HR equivalent, yeah. Right? And they gave me a checklist and it basically just told me to go meet a battalion sergeant major. So now I have a battalion. The interesting thing was, though, that I knew that battalion wasn't deploying, and I really wanted to deploy. And my buddy gave me the idea to go and speak to the deploying battalion sergeant major and ask if I could come to them instead. And so I did. I went and I talked to him. I told him I wanted to deploy. And
are you still at Fort Bragg now?
No, this was back when it was called Fort Lewis, Washington, now a Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington State.
Okay.
Just south of Seattle. Kept winding up on the West Coast for some reason. But, normally in the military, I don't think you go to somebody and ask them if you can switch organizations and go deploy. But that was my first kind of taste of Special Forces and how it works a little different. And so I ended up going to a different battalion, and then I found out that the company that I was going to, and I went and I started trying to sell myself to get to a detachment, and pitch myself to different detachments and interface with them while I was in processing. And I ended up going to a team that was already mostly deployed. And so I met them on my first deployment about a month after that. And right around the holidays of 2009, 2000, into 2010, I arrived in Afghanistan for my first deployment as a Green Beret.
And you were in Afghanistan how long?
For about 7 months that year.
So there, what year are we talking about now?
2010. Yep.
Things are hot and heavy.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
So you did, can you tell us at all what you did in Afghanistan?
Yeah, absolutely. So, 2010 was still around the early on to the middle of the war. We were focused on trying to stabilize regions and disrupt the Taliban mostly. So we were training police force. We were trying to recruit and train police force that looked a whole lot like militias. And then we were standing up special operations within the Afghan army at that point. So we had already had an Afghan army stood up, and we were starting to pull their best and brightest to try to make smaller, more highly trained units that we could fly around with on helicopters and go do point target raids against the Taliban with. So you're thinking more like, I guess it'd be more like the U.S. Army Ranger equivalent of a soldier. And even along that time, we were pulling from those elements. We were pulling their best and brightest, trying to make an Afghan Army Special Forces that could go out and live among the population and do kind of what we were meant to do.
I can't imagine how difficult that must have been because of how pervasive the Taliban network is. And they find out one of their own is being trained by the Green Berets. They're probably put his family at risk. True, false?
Absolutely. Very high risk working with us. I think everybody's pretty familiar with what green on blue incidents were, as they called them, where our partnered forces would turn on us or be influenced to turn on us. There's a lot of those types of incidents going on. There's a lot of constant, vetting and reassessing the people that we're working with and making sure that they're doing the right thing and that they're not being subjected to those kinds of things. But, there's high risk with what we did. It did happen. And, occasionally, I do think though, that the power of that, when you think about being a Green Beret was you would send, the Army would send out whole battalions of young soldiers, 18, 19, 20 year old American soldiers to go and disrupt an area. When we would go out as a 12-person detachment, probably only 8 of us were there because we were never full detachments. We would go out with, a couple hundred of our partner force and do the same thing. So you think about the impact of that on the Americans and just the fact that we were, a little more highly skilled, but really we were able to do more with less.
Did you ever feel that this was just an unwinnable war, that we were just not going to be able to do what we did in previous theaters of battle?
Sure. I always think of things from a different lens, just being a Green Beret, understanding, the strategic, the operational, and the tactical aspects of it. But, tactically, we won almost every time we went out.
Sure.
Operationally, effects-wise, we were really good at driving effects across the battle space. It was where it really fall apart is the duration that war went on. You think of every 4 years, we were switching administrations. Every 6 months, we were switching command teams, and we were rotating in and out. So imagine working for a company where every 4 years, the owner changed hands, and then every 6 months, the management team rotated out. It doesn't build for good continuity of effort. We fought several six-month wars is the way I looked at it.
So you weren't there when the great withdrawal by America took place. But I'm sure when you heard about it or watched it or whatever, you must have been upset.
Absolutely. I think of, the first thing that went through my mind, and I'm sure a lot of my friends' minds, were all the people we lost. I think of not just Americans even, but all the partner force, and all the just all of the fighting, all of the things that we had to do and experience, and just trying to find a way to rationalize that it wasn't for not, and thinking through that, it really chewed a lot of my friends up. It definitely weighed on me. I think, a lot of people were saying that was our Vietnam, and I don't disagree with that. I can't speak to Vietnam because I wasn't there, but, I have spoken to a lot of Vietnam-era veterans. And, what I will say is the way that I rationalize it, my last deployment as a team sergeant, I will say I lost none of my teammates. And that's what I rationalize it with, is I went so as that I could bring as many of my friends home, right? And that was why I rejoined. In 2007 when I rejoined, I'd lost my best friend in Iraq, and I felt a little bit of survivor's guilt on that, and I still do to today, but, that was why I rejoined, and I felt like that was my goal every deployment, was to bring my friends home, bring myself my friends
home. Well, good for you, and I don't know whether you had to... You reached this point by getting some help when you came back from that theater after all this was going on. But when you think about what we did and how we withdrew and those that were loyal to us from the Afghans, and we left them behind.
Absolutely.
Then we left billions of dollars of military equipment in the Bagram Air Force Base right there.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just insanity.
Absolutely.
Insanity. But I could spend 2 hours on that. So where from Afghanistan did you go?
I went to Afghanistan several times throughout my career. Being at First Special Forces Group with an Asiatic language, I went to Asia a lot. So yeah. Spent a lot of time in Korea, time in the Philippines, bouncing around Southeast Asia quite a bit. Some of our other Special Forces groups that were aligned to different areas, I will say that some of them didn't get as well-rounded of an experience, I think, as some of us did in First Group, and that I could find myself coaching a mayor of a city in Southeast Asia on how to stabilize their region through police force or emergency services one day. And in a few months, I could find myself in Afghanistan conducting night raids. So I feel like I really started to understand the complexities of geopolitical situations and really thinking about complex problem solving. And that whole comprehensive approach is really an understatement, I would say, in some of those things.
I'm sorry to say we're out of time, but how long were you in the Green Berets before you hung it up?
Totally about 16 years.
16 years?
Yeah,
my God. Good for you.
Yep.
So you just came out, what, a few years ago?
Yeah, I just retired 2 years ago and moved to Rock Hill.
Good for you. We're glad to have you here, Kevin.
Thank you.
He's quite a guy, quite a story, and thank you for sharing it with us today on Straight Talk.
Yes, sir.
That's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. All right, one more time, we're going to marshal the forces here at Substation 2. We do fresh subs and salads. We do them 6 days a week between 10 in the morning and 9 o'clock at night. Let's see if we can get the attention of the crowd in here at the count of three. Are we ready? One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Not bad. Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.